Chapter 3, The Dolls. Granny never gave presents at Christmas, but she was very generous at birthdays, and each child could approach her about a week before the big day and remind her, "I'm going to be 5 next Thursday." Granny would unbend from her usual rather austere dignity. "What would you like this year, dear?" Always the answer would be, "Oh, a doll, please, Granny." The younger aunts would be amused. "Surely between you and Connie, you've got enough dolls by now." But no, it had to be a doll, and it always was. Always on birthday, there was this big box with a longed-for doll inside. This year, it had a head of tight brown curls and a mischievous expression. It was dressed in a blue romper. "What are you going to call him?" asked the aunts. "Violet," I answered, having dreamt of a violet all week. Auntie Lillian and Phyllis were delighted. "But don't you see it's a boy doll?" I looked more closely. Yes, definitely it was a boy. "All right then, Charlie Violet." And Charlie Violet he remained over the years until his curls became matted and sparse and his face a mass of bumps and wrinkles, not much left of his nose. Connie and I were the proprietors of a doll orphanage. We were not always scrupulously fair as caregivers to the unfortunate dolls we looked after. In fact, we were downright discretionary. Connie was the headmistress. Her name was Mrs. Sauerkraut, and I, even less imaginatively, was Miss Sourpuss. Our doll's house was the entire top floor of the Gorge house, the attic, which had been plastered and linoed, but no partitions for separate rooms. There were 2 dormers, however, with casement windows which served as kitchen and bedroom. There was also a terrifying door which led to an unfinished portion of the attic, all exposed joists and spiderwebs. We furnished our doll orphanage with whatever came to hand, a few bits of doll furniture such as cribs, etc., a miniature chest of drawers, and for the rest we improvised with boxes and imagination. We made a piano from a practice keyboard chart which came with Connie's music book. We made cupboards out of wooden Japanese orange boxes and tables out of apple crates. Mrs. Sauerkraut had a daughter, Sylvia. Sylvia and Claire had been handed down to us by some school friends who probably couldn't stand them because they were so ugly. They were large, life-size dolls with composition heads and painted hair and features and stiffly stuffed cloth bodies. Sylvia was a frightful prig. She was pampered outrageously by her mother and was selfish enough to take full advantage of her privileged status. She was always dressed in roughly party clothes, even had patent leather baby shoes. She had yellow plaits glued on by Connie, made from a skein of yellow darning wool, and glasses made out of wires the paperboy tied up the times with. She was insufferable. Her counterpart, Claire, was exploited for all she was worth, which admittedly wasn't much. She was slow-witted and clumsy, always getting blamed for everything that went wrong. She worked hard in the kitchen, doing all the cooking and cleaning, and never got to go on any of the outings or take piano lessons, like darling Sylvia. Under it all, however, she had the soul of a poet. In fact, she was a poet. At the annual Christmas concert, she would surprise everyone by reciting one of her own poems. How about this? "I like cooking. I think it's lots of fun. And every time I do it right, I always get a bun. I like cooking. I do it quite a lot. And every time I do it right, I get to lick the pot." For once, Claire was in her glory. In all, we must have had over a dozen dolls at any one time. If a doll wore out, parts of it were recycled. One well-meaning aunt once gave us a beautiful china doll with a glorious mane of lovely nut-brown human hair. Of course, it didn't survive a week in our rough hands. In fact, it was so short-lived, it never had a name. But its hair lived on and became the crowning, indeed the only, glory of Bluebell, who was so old and decrepit no one knew where she came from. Her cloth body had become so limp that it had to be bolstered up by a miniature sample corset some aunt had finangled from a lingerie shop. Wearing her corset, with her hair newly curled and styled by Connie, Bluebell had a certain dignity about her. But for a fateful failing, Bluebell had fits. At any moment, without warning or provocation, she could be wreathing around on the floor, foaming at the mouth. Poor Bluebell! Whenever she had been so indiscreet as to indulge in one of her fits, always at an awkward moment, would be severely punished by her supervisors. But somehow she never learned. Punish her as we would, Bluebell persisted in having her fits. Who else lived in our orphanage? Well, Shirley Temple, of course. Nice enough at heart, but a born clothes horse and vain. Always primping her golden curls in a hand mirror. Charlie Violet was greatly smitten by her and would have done anything to gain her regard, but she was too career-minded to bother with a nobody like him. Little did she know what a gem she was rejecting. There was Patsy, I remember, a cheap doll in every sense, famous only for having fallen out of the attic window and survived with only a crack in her skull, much bandaged. And there was Heidi, a handmade Swiss maiden who was so lean and waif-like and so ethereal in expression that anything could send her into a terror, whereat she would crawl into the suitcase she always carried with her, crawl into her suitcase without even opening it. Obviously a refugee from war-torn Europe. But I've saved the best for last. Honeysuckle. Ah, my sweet little Honeysuckle. She was Charlie's little sister, and he guarded her fiercely. Severely handicapped, she often lost one or more of her arms and legs, made of rubber. They could easily be twisted off, particularly by an older brother. She was a game little thing, however, and crawled and hopped after the others with unquestionable cheerfulness, full of mischief and affection. She was everybody's favorite. I don't believe she ever learned to talk, but she could get her message across somehow. Through thick and thin, Honeysuckle was always there. She was always the best doll. These dolls led a very interesting life. When we had school friends or cousins over to play, they couldn't understand why we were not interested in dressing and undressing our dolls and fussing with their hair. Well, we did that too, of course, but the main object of our play was the running soap opera of the dolls' lives. Never a dull moment. Once, when Chris was not busy on a rainy afternoon, they all went for a bus ride, the bus being ingeniously constructed out of odd bits of furniture. Of course, Charlie was the driver, and he didn't have his license. A horrible accident occurred. Blood everywhere and scattered limbs. Bluebell, of course, did her thing, as did Heidi, and Sylvia went completely to pieces, hysterically blaming everyone for everything. It was up to the injured Charlie to effect a heroic rescue, after which the orphanage was turned into a hospital, Claire taking on the duties of nurse on top of her usual chores. These adventures would be written up by Connie and me in the evenings and illustrated in blank-paged exercise books. We used to lie awake at night planning the next day's installment. Our imaginations were fertile. Some of their adventures were pretty incredible. You remember Sylvia's piano and elocution lessons? Well, when the ladies were out at their weekly bridge parties, Charlie Violet would sneak into the music room and play the piano any chance he got. Of course, the ladies squashed anything like this when Sylvia ratted on him, But nonetheless, one day a gentleman passing on the street below was so arrested by the quality of Charlie's playing that he made inquiries, and finding that the boy was a poor orphan, had detectives put on the trail. After a long search, it was finally revealed that Charlie was none other than the long-lost son of the renowned pianist Paderewski. The great man eventually came to the orphanage, where, of course, the ladies fawned over him, trying to get him to audition Sylvia. A joyful reunion took place between father and son, and then, alas, the famous musician left to continue his career, leaving Charlie behind to fare how he might, and a new adventure would begin. We had two friends who were sympathetic to our way of playing dolls, or at least admiring. They were Joan and Betty May Bird, although Betty May hardly counted, being much too young. Joan and Betty May had a goat house in their backyard, but no goats, and one summer we were allowed to clean it up to make a summer cottage for the dolls. We washed down all the walls and windows, even planted nasturtiums by the door. The Bird's elder sister, Tiny, worked in the paint department at Eaton's. She donated a sample book of wallpaper patterns, which we pasted on the walls. Once we had set up the house nicely, though, the dolls enjoyed a rather leisurely summer. We were too busy with other things in the warm weather, so the dolls languished in the goat house until the end of summer, when they returned to their active life in the attic. The dolls were central to our lives. Everything we did was related in some way to the dolls. The stories we read, the news events, found their way into their adventures. We learned to knit, to make patchwork quilts, and sew little dresses for our dolls. Connie especially enjoyed messing around with the hair of those who had any. I guess in some way we were preparing for our future. We both had large and lively families.